Hello and welcome to the Gadget Show podcast, and big news this week as we're excited to announce that we've partnered up with T3 magazine.
Woo!
So over, isn't it cool?
Yeah.
So over the coming weeks we'll be reporting with various members of their team on all things tech and gaming.
And we're kicking things off this week with T3's news editor, Rick Henderson, who's joining us to talk all things Switch 2.
Love Rick. I used to work with him a long, long time ago. I hate to think how many decades. Anyway, I'm sure that will come out in the course of our conversation. Anyway, unbelievably, Nintendo's latest portable console celebrates Susie's 1 year birthday. I can't believe we're already there.
I know, it's extraordinary,
isn't it?
Yeah, so the question is, has it actually been a success? What's worked, what hasn't worked, and where does Nintendo go next?
That's interesting. We're taking a deep dive into all of it, from the games and the hardware to what the future looks like for Nintendo's biggest console launch in years.
Yeah, but before we get into all of that, a quick word from our sponsors, CEX, because let's be honest, we all love shiny new tech, but upgrading can get expensive very quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. Meanwhile, there's probably an old phone, a games console, tablet, you know, laptop, whatever, sitting in a drawer at home right now that could actually help pay for your next gadget purchase.
Yeah, and that's where CEX comes in. You can trade in your old tech for cash, or you can get even more in store credit towards something new.
We absolutely love CEX. It's a really good match for this podcast. So I'm happy to say that when you're buying from CEX, everything is fully tested. It's checked out and ready for a second life.
Yeah, which means that you can grab great tech for less without always needing to buy brand new.
Plus, everything comes with a 5-year warranty included. So better for your wallet, better for the planet, and honestly, a great excuse to clear out that drawer full of old cables and forgotten gadgets.
Exactly. So head to webuy.com or pop into your local CEX store to see what your old tech could be worth. Now, before we get stuck in, if you're enjoying the Gadget Show podcast, do us a favour and hit follow or subscribe wherever you're listening. And if you've got a few spare seconds, leave us a rating or a review too. It really helps people discover the podcast, keeps us going and keeps us doing what we do. And it means that you will never miss an episode, of course, when it lands. Right then, first up, Jace, it's you. What's caught your eye this week? What have you been obsessing about?
Slightly off-piste, I've got a new record player. I thought you'd like this.
What
which
is
we
it?
Did mention. Do you remember when you joined? I was on the sofa at the Ideal Home Exhibition. And you, I don't know where you were.
I was just probably here.
Somewhere around the world. And I mentioned a record player. And now, full transparency, since then they've sent me one. But what I'm telling you, I can say whatever I want. I could say it's a load of rubbish if I want to. It's not. You'll be pleased to know. It's called the Mix Analog Plus. And I'll just show you it really quickly. Because, of course, the whole thing is Bluetooth, Susie.
Okay.
I can just grab it off the floor. I've actually got a little 12-inch for my record collection on there. Pick the record off, carefully put it down there, and you may remember, click, there you go, CD player inside.
Oh, that's very cool, isn't it? Actually, yeah. I need a new CD player because I've just ordered Level 42 special remix of all of their jazz stuff from the really early days. But it's on CD.
Ah, right, yeah. So this would be good.
Yeah.
I've kind of skew-whiffed the top, but I'll work it out. The Mix Analog Plus, both CD player and vinyl player, has had me play my old vinyls and a couple of CDs, which I bought off a car boot sale. No word of a lie at the weekend. This week, so there you go. But also for gaming fans, big news if you're a Bond fan, because there's a brand new James Bond game landing this week, and early reviews are looking extremely promising. The game's called 007 First Light, and instead of the polished martini-sipping super spy we all know, this version goes, well, right back to the beginning, before Bond's earning of his 00 status, right? So Irish actor Patrick Gibson is playing a younger Bond, and apparently the whole idea is to make him feel more raw, more inexperienced, or kind of, I don't know, human, I guess. It's said to take inspiration from Ian Fleming's original novels, especially Casino Royale, where Bond's a little bit rougher around the edges. What's really interesting is the timing, because this arrives at a time when the Bond franchise, Susie, is kind of in limbo. Yeah. We still don't officially know who the next Bond is going to be after Daniel Craig. And MGM and Amazon are now heavily involved in the future of the franchise. So the game itself is being developed by IO Interactive, the team behind the Hitman games, which, if I'm absolutely honest, bodes really well, doesn't it? It's the perfect fit. You know, stealth, disguises, gadgets, globetrotting, espionage. They already know how to do all of that quite brilliantly in the Hitman series. And from everything that we've seen so far, I think this has the makings, the DNA of a really good return to the 007 gaming experience, which, for you know, has its retro roots for me in GoldenEye, of course, one of my absolute, you know, standout favourite games ever. So, yeah, this is really, really exciting. I've not played it. I've not seen a preview. I, as yet, have to experience the game. But, yeah, very exciting.
I hope they pick the right James Bond and don't go too far out of the lane. I know I'm going down a different route here, but please just pick the right James Bond. Just don't... We know how he was written, so just pick how he was written.
I know what you're
That's
saying.
That's my message.
I know what you're saying. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, we like our... Yeah, there's certain things that need to remain traditional and kind of, you know, based on the original lore. And one of those IPs is Bond, isn't it?
And there is a lore. There is a James Bond lore. Moving on. I've mentioned on previous podcasts just how much of a fan I've always been of the Kindle Colorsoft.
Oh, yeah.
Well, the reviews are finally rolling in for Amazon's brand new Kindle Scribe Colorsoft. And honestly, after reading T3's review, I can't wait to actually try it out myself. Now, this is Amazon going full premium.
Cool.
I think you know where this is going to end up. Full premium. We're taking an 11-inch colour e-ink display, built-in stylus, note-taking, sketching, comics, books. Basically, it's the fanciest Kindle that they've ever made. And T3 actually say that the redesign is a massive improvement. So the old chunky bezel has gone. It's now super slim, just 5.4 millimetres thick, so half a centimetre. Comes in these really classy new colours, and apparently it feels gorgeous in your hand, which is a big thing, but there is a catch. It's the price. So brace yourselves for this one. In the UK, it starts at £569.
It's a lot of money. Yeah, it's a significant investment.
Yeah, T3 were really impressed with the reading experience, especially for comics and colour content. And they say that the writing feel is really solid as well, although maybe not quite as refined as something like a Remarkable tablet. But the big talking point is obviously the colour screen. Amazon's really pushing it as the future of Kindle, but T3 reckons the colours still feel a bit muted and pastely compared to a normal tablet display. I personally don't mind that, but I know that some people do. When you're paying, I suppose, nearly £200 more than your standard Kindle Scribe just to get colour, then it's a serious upgrade cost. So worth thinking about. But they did say that if you love comics, note-taking, journaling, and you want one device that does everything for you, then this could be your dream setup. And honestly, I'm such a Kindle nerd at this point. I still really want one, even if my, you know, bank account is screaming. That's a little bit too hasty. But you can get the full review for it on t3.com.
Right, our gadget show competition is now closed, and we'll be revealing the lucky winner in next week's episode. It's very exciting.
Yes, but hope is not lost for anybody that didn't win or anybody who missed out the first time around, because
we've got another £5,000 to give away from CEX. Yep, another £5,000 is up for grabs.
And once again, it's just for our Patreon listeners, so your odds are looking pretty good compared to most competitions online.
To enter, just head to patreon.com/thegadgetshow and sign up to one of our paid tiers. We've got light, mid or max, starting at about the price of a cup of coffee.
Yeah, light gets you one entry, mid gets you three, and max gets you five. So if you fancy boosting your chances, then obviously that's the one to go for.
Yeah, then you just send us a DM on Patreon with the answer to this question. Back when The Gadget Show first launched in 2004, which one of these would you most likely have carried in your pocket? A, an MP3 player. B, an AI pin. C, a Steam Deck. Or D, a VR headset.
And don't forget, you're not just entering the competition.
Yeah, you get ad-free episodes of the podcast, early access, and a bunch of bonus bits. And we keep adding to those bonus bits. Things like, you know, a walk around Susie's lingerie drawer. I don't know why I said that.
I don't know why you said that. You're not.
I was going to say my lockup, but no one's really interested. Anyway, sorry.
Not even on Max. But on Max, you will get the full Gadget Show archive. 20 years. That's nearly 500 episodes. It's all in there, including the cat suit. I'll give you that.
So if you want better odds, loads of extras, and a shot at a £5,000 tech shopping spree from CEX, head to patreon.com/thegadgetshow now.
Full terms and conditions are linked in the episode. Right, let's get into this week's big feature then, because somehow it's already been almost a year since Nintendo launched Switch 2, which seems absolutely bizarre because I feel like everyone's still arguing online about whether they're going to get one or not. Well, joining us now is someone who's been covering the console from day one, T3's news editor, welcome, Rick Henderson.
Hi. Good to be here.
Hi, it's nice
How
to
you doing,
see you,
Rick?
Again.
Good to see you, buddy.
Yeah,
We've
good
done
to be back,
so
actually.
So many things, haven't we, over the years?
We certainly
going
have.
Back 20 years. Yeah. It's good to see you.
What's that T-shirt I can see just bobbing underneath the camera? Yeah, let's have a look. I think I can guess.
Ready? Yeah, it's a callback.
That is so good. A golden joystick.
Yeah, golden joystick.
From back in the day, buddy.
And strangely, I do have an official one from when I worked on it. However, this one's an unofficial one that I got from Etsy.
So what's been going on then since you've last been on the pod for you and for T3 as well, Rick?
T3's gone from strength to strength. It's been quite a manic year for a number of reasons, good and bad. The technology industry is going through a very strange period at the time, not least thanks to the RAM crisis and AI data centers. But so that's kind of curbed the amount of launches. So we're kind of being a little bit more inventive in what we cover. And one of the things I've certainly been doing is I seem to have, for some reason, been inundated with Chinese mini PCs, hundreds of them. They're all flooding over into this country.
Really?
Yeah. which is extraordinary. And I'd never really I'd never really used one before, but I'm a retro gamer, as you can see, Games Master, etc. But also I'm a retro gaming freak. And so what I've been doing is I've been using these mini PCs to create retro gaming consoles, my own Steam Deck, Steam Machine.
Steam Machine.
And all manner of things. So I've been doing little projects. And and it's actually been a lot of fun. It's been a lot of fun along the way. And readers really want to read about that sort of thing. I think the way I see what we've done on T3 over the last, certainly the last 6 months, is while tech is taking a little bit of a time out, we're telling people how to upgrade their lives and upgrade the existing kit that you've got in your pocket or on your telly or any of the other things. And I think that's where the exciting stuff is happening at the moment. Of course, we've got WWDC coming up very soon. We had Google I/O very recently. So it's very much going to be about software this year. So, yeah.
But that's what happens when, you know, the price of hardware goes through the roof when all the data centers that you mentioned are sucking it all up. And I think you mentioned the Steam Machine. That's going to be interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
How they roll out a console en masse when the price of many of the components has gone astronomically high. And the, you know, not only that, but the Steam Machine and the Steam Frame. So a VR helmet, both of which use RAM, graphics card acceleration technology, et cetera, et cetera.
Launching a console this year is almost insane, but it is quite frankly the most exciting product for me that I've been waiting for. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what Valve do and whether or not they manage to get it out for less than £1,000. That's the big key.
Let's get into the Switch 2 then. So do you think it's been a success for Nintendo?
Well, it's been an undoubted success for Nintendo in terms of sales. They've sold 20 million of them already. For me, who pre-ordered one before day one, got it on day one, I've barely touched it since.
And really?
Yeah, there's good reasons for that. I probably did for the first 3 or 4 weeks. Certainly after Donkey Kong Bonanza came out, I played it a lot to finish that one game. But
do you think they played it too safe then?
Yeah, I think that the upgrade is a great upgrade, but the games that have followed have not. So, and this is back to what we were saying about Valve and the Steam Machine and Half-Life, in the fact that there's people don't buy a Nintendo console to play Indiana Jones and the Great Circle. They can play that on anything. They don't buy a Nintendo console for... they won't buy a Nintendo Switch 2 to play games you can equally play on a Nintendo Switch OLED, if you know, at the same resolution. But what they will buy it for is for new Nintendo IP and for new Nintendo games that make best use of Nintendo Switch hardware. And we have been completely starved in that area. And that's the... So I love the Nintendo Switch 2. I gave it 5 stars in my review. I was really, really... I saw great potential for it. But what I've discovered since, over the last year, is that there are very few opportunities to go back to it in comparison to the PS5 Pro or the PS5 or the Xbox Series X. Now, I'm lucky in the respect that I have them all, and obviously not everybody does. So therefore, Nintendo Switch 2 may become maybe their only console, in which case, go for it. It's brilliant. But if it isn't, there are better opportunities out there at the moment.
You've probably just answered my next... Oh, sorry, Jace. You've probably just answered my next question, really, on where Nintendo should improve.
100%.
Clearly, you know, so people like you that bought it may have actually been quite disappointed with the follow-on.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think what Nintendo needs to do is find more ways of use, more use cases for that Switch 2. Not just in like a new Mario game, please. Or some of the things. I mean, even the new Star Fox they've announced is actually a remake of an N64 classic. So even
that's not... like it's a bad thing.
No, that's a great thing, and it was a great game anyway. And anybody new to it will love that game. But we are looking for new stuff. I do like the fact that they are bringing out new accessories. I've got the Virtua Boy.
I was going to ask you the retro thing because of your retro credentials.
Because of all, I've got every single accessory they've released for it in terms of retro sense. And in fact, I was at CES the year that Virtua Boy was actually officially launched, that original time.
Whoa, what, the original?
Yeah, the original.
What was that, 95, 93?
Yeah. So, yeah, I was at CES in 1995. And so I used the original and I came away feeling sick. And I couldn't, I fully expected it to fail, and it did. 6 months later, they discontinued it. But having brought it back, and they've made it better because it's using a Switch screen, not something else. They've actually made it a lot better, and it's actually quite good fun. But they need to do little things like that. Like I remember when the Switch first came out, we all got really excited, and just simple little games that used the Joy-Cons in interesting ways.
Yeah.
And things like that. And that, there's nothing like that apart from the original Switch ones that you can play on the Switch 2. So yeah, they just need to do something more. They just need to do something more with that hardware.
Can I ask you about the pricing as well, the price point? Because obviously it was quite expensive. I mean, we've already said that it sold brilliantly. But, you know, with software prices creeping up, and it kind of fell into the world of Sony and Apple, you know, you kind of expect that from premium, but maybe not from sort of family-friendly Nintendo. They've had a bit of stick from that as well, haven't they?
Yeah, indeed. And this goes back to the RAM crisis we're talking about. They're about to put a $50 price rise in the US, and in other regions we'll get a comparative price rise. The UK is holding off for now. There's not a price rise coming to the UK yet, but I understand that it is in the post. So, and I would imagine it will put the price up to about £450 for a Switch 2. But what they tend to do, and I think what they might cleverly do, they've just done this in the US to justify the price rise in the US. They've actually bundled Donkey Kong Bonanza and Mario Kart World, I think, in a bundle. So you're actually getting, at least you're getting two of the best games for the same price. And hopefully they'll do that in the UK as well. But £450 is a lot of money, certainly when we're, you know, in the current circumstances when everything costs more. That is a lot
cheaper
of money.
Than my electricity bill for the month.
Yeah, well, you know, the electricity bills are going up by a darn sight more than Nintendo Switch 2. And in its field, it's also, the price rise is also comparative to in fact, less than the price rise of the PlayStation 5, for example. That I mean, the PlayStation 5 Pro went up by about £100. So we're talking about all of the industries having to do this, and beyond gaming, way beyond gaming. Samsung TVs have just gone up in price. All smart TVs will go up in price. All phones will go up in price, bar probably Apple, because Apple stockpiled RAM before the crisis. So I mean,
still put the price up anyway.
Yeah, 100%. And to be fair, £400 for what was an upgrade on an existing console was already a fairly hefty chunk. My tip, as things actually stand right now, is to look for a Nintendo Switch OLED or a second-hand Nintendo Switch, because you'll get it for less than half that price, and you'll still play all the same games, bar probably about
the
three
same
or four.
Gaming experience. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. The difference is there, but it's not critical, as you've very, very brilliantly pointed out. Yeah, it's interesting. What about say comparing something like Animal Crossing, which was, you know, that was the breakout game, wasn't it? I think it was during COVID. It doesn't feel like it was that long ago, but I think it was on the original Switch, with something like Pokemon Pocopia, which I can never say properly. That's an interesting comparison, isn't it?
It is, but I mean, I've played both, and Pokemon Pocopia and the new Tamagotchi Life game are both really good little life sims. But funny enough, I don't find them as appealing as the original Animal Crossing. I still go back to the original Animal Crossing. And again, it goes back to whether or not you need that extra grunt. These sort of games can play on anything. You can play them on a toaster. They're really sort of light-hearted, light games. You do not need to play them in 4K. You do, you know, if you've got a massive 65-inch 4K TV and you're playing it, you're not going to get any more out of that experience. You really aren't. So, again, back to the Nintendo Switch. I think what that proves is how brilliant the original Nintendo Switch actually was. Yeah. I mean, look, we're talking about the one-year anniversary of the Switch 2. What is it, 10 years, 8 years since the Nintendo Switch came out?
That's insane.
And that's a point in itself, isn't it? Nintendo are really competing kind of against themselves.
Yeah.
In what they provide and in what people love about Nintendo. And the joy that people get, because you don't get the greatest graphics, but it's the experience that people love.
I think one of my greatest abiding memories is playing Wii Sports with my mom. Meaning a totally unique experience. My mom had never played. I used to do a really rude joke, actually, when I was a stand-up about playing Daley Thompson's Track and Field.
To be fair, I used a very similar joke with Joe Guest when hosting the Quake World Championships back in the 90s.
What a brilliant reference that is. But the other gaming experience I remember with my mom, which was a real one rather than a made-up one, was playing Wii Sports. So the point I'm making is that Wii Sports was one of the most universal gaming experiences ever created. So why do we not have something that is a really good new Wii Sports experience on the Switch 2? I know there have been lots of contenders for that crown, but nothing that goes back to the roots of that game quite as comprehensively in terms of the insane, funny, stupid, yet addictive ways of interacting with pixels on your TV.
Yeah, I agree. And especially seeing as Switch 2 has better motion hardware.
Yeah.
So you could have a better experience, like going all the way from the Wiimote, which was a great experience, but the lag was extraordinary.
Yeah,
so tennis was particularly tough, but it was also everybody's favourite game. So,
yeah.
So, and then Switch, I'm trying to, was it called 1-2 Go? The original game that came out with the Switch where you could hold the Joy-Con. It felt like there were balls inside the Joy-Con.
Yes,
you had to
guess
how many ball bearings were inside.
Yeah.
Games like that I used to play all the time. I mean, my daughter was growing up at that time, so it was perfect. It was an absolutely glorious era. And we haven't seen that from Switch 2 yet, even though it has more sophisticated motion hardware. And it's got the camera In fact, the camera is another argument in itself, because it was a massive deal when they were launching, during the launch videos for the console. And they were saying, oh, this sort of community gaming, and you could all have a camera and you can all pop up above your Mario Kart with your actual face in real time, etc. I don't know anyone who owns the camera. I don't know a single person.
No,
because
you're right.
they haven't used it again. It's like it's underused.
Yeah, they haven't made it a necessary novel integrated part of a gaming experience, which is why I reference Wii Sports.
So, Rick, in summary, then, the Switch 2, a phenomenal success for Nintendo in terms of sales, and yet with the issues that you've talked about, why do you think it's been able to be so successful? And as you've mentioned as well, will continue to be, or is predicted to be, phenomenally huge.
I think that there are two things about that. The Nintendo Switch sold so many units that a lot of people upgraded, and they were expecting more, and I myself included. I paid the money straight away as soon as I could, because I thought it would be better served. But that doesn't mean it's not going to be. That means that people are paying for potential.
Right.
It's very similar to the PS5 Pro over the PS5. When that first came out, people paid for the potential. And you're talking over 100 million owners of the original Switch. Only 5 of them have upgraded. That's a big thing. Or people have held off from buying a Switch, so they've decided, well, I might as well buy the latest and the greatest.
Yeah.
And they can then catch up with all the original Switch games, which is great. I mean, there are thousands of games. Don't get me wrong. There are thousands of games on the Switch 2. They're just not all made for the Switch 2. So I think that's what drove people to do it. What I think will subsequently happen is we might start seeing
jumped 5 to 5 years now, yeah. Where should it be? What should be around it? What should the ecosystem be?
Yeah, so essentially what Nintendo needs to do is to get the games coming out in a regular and timely fashion, but also find those extra little weird and wonderful things that we love about Nintendo. Like the Labo for the original Switch, where it was all made of cardboard and they turned the Switch into different devices to keep the kids happy. And also a focus on family gaming. While there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of Switch games you can play on the Nintendo Switch 2 that the whole family will enjoy, it'd be nice to see a few new ones. And other than, say, Split Fiction, which I've been playing with my daughter, which I absolutely adore, which is couch co-op, but it doesn't use motion gaming. And we were talking about the motion gaming. I just think Nintendo needs to think about all those little things that make Nintendo unique.
They're back to basics.
Especially as we're coming up to Project Helix and the PlayStation 6. Because when they arrive, the hardcore gamers will leave in their droves. So what they need to do is they need to secure that casual family audience. Mm. And hopefully we'll see a few sales in things like Black Friday and things like that to also appeal more to the families in terms of price.
Well, I think you've covered everything really beautifully, Rick. It's great to see you. Thank you so much for joining us. And hope to catch up with you again soon.
Definitely, anytime.
Right then, that's another Gadget Show episode wrapped up. Massive thanks to T3's Rick Henderson for joining us, and we'll catch up with those guys again soon. Of course, they're on T3.com.
But before we disappear, though, we need to say a massive thank you to all the brilliant people supporting us on Patreon. Really, it's huge. And this podcast would not exist without you. And as I've been speaking, I believe
your names.
Wonderful names, yeah, are on the screen. So thanks so much to our Patreon posse.
Yeah, thanks from me too. We'll see you next time.
See you next time.
The Gadget Show podcast with Jason and Susie was presented by Jason Bradbury and Susie Perry off the telly. It was produced by Ewan Keel and Tom Clint, and is a North One production.